Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. This, as you've been hearing on the news today, is the day of President Biden's first speech as president to the UN General Assembly. Almost every other world leader is really glad he's not Donald Trump, right? But they've also got questions. Why weren't they consulted more closely about the plan to leave Afghanistan, which turned out to be based on faulty intelligence about how safe it would be? Why is the U.S. charging ahead with booster shots for vaccinated Americans when so many countries don't have first doses? Excuse me, as I had to cough at just the wrong moment. Why did the U.S. strike that nuclear submarine deal with Australia last week, cutting the legs out of France's submarine contract down under and without prior notice when France is one of our closest allies? How much leadership in climate change is Biden really going to show? And while Joe Biden is definitely not Donald Trump, if you close your eyes and imagine it's 2018 again, this could have been Trump's Homeland Security Secretary speaking yesterday at the U.S.-Mexico border.
If you come to the United States illegally, you will be returned. Your journey will not succeed, and you will be endangering your life and your family's lives.
Yes, that was Joe Biden's Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, speaking near the border yesterday in Del Rio, Texas, issuing that warning not to Central Americans, as Trump's people did so many times, but to Haitians who have suddenly come in large numbers. You know about the Haiti earthquake and hurricane and presidential assassination of the last few months. But one of the things about this story is that many of the new Haitian migrants haven't lived in Haiti in years. We'll get to that. But maybe you saw the disturbing video footage on TV yesterday of large numbers of Haitian migrants huddled under a border bridge in Del Rio for temporary shelter, or the U.S. Border Patrol people on horseback pushing them back like cattle. Biden's people actually had to deny they were using whips on the crowd, which is what some of the horseback footage looks like. Or maybe you heard about how the number of Haitians now, estimated around 13,000 to 16,000, equals a third of the local population of Del Rio, the Texas town they're congregating in. So what's happening, and what's the responsible and moral thing for the Biden administration to do? With me now, we have Natalie Kitroff, New York Times, Caribbean and Central America correspondent, and BuzzFeed News, national security and immigration reporter Adolfo Flores, who is down there and whose latest article is called Thousands of Haitians Lack Food, Water, and Medicine at Bleak U.S.-Mexico Border Camp. Adolfo and Natalie, thank you very much for your time. Welcome to WNYC today.
Thanks for having
us. Thank
you. And before we get into details of the situation and invite phone calls, primarily from any Haitian listeners who might know somebody there or have other thoughts, Adolfo, even the title of your article suggests that how we discuss immigration and a situation like this depends on who we care about. Your headline centers the migrants themselves. Thousands of Haitians lack food, water, and medication at Bleak U.S.-Mexico border camp. The Wall Street Journal headline on this today is very different. It says, U.S. flies Haitian migrants home in bid to manage border crisis. So the Journal's starting point is that the border has a crisis. Yours is that thousands of people do. Can you describe the camp that you refer to in your headline?
Yeah, it's an outdoor camp. There's the images you'll see is like you'll see a lot of people underneath the bridge, but there's a lot of brush, and in that brush are little houses made out of bamboo and leaves that they've tied together to shield from the sun. But it's, you know, there really is no order to it. The trash is growing by the day, and while people there get food from DHS, it's not enough. I was there Sunday at 1 p.m. They got a taco and a bottled water, but it's nearly 100 degrees, or it's in the high 90s. And there's lots of children who are sick or, you know, just wanted something to drink. So it's the parents are having to give the kids whatever they get. And it's still, it's not enough.
Natalie, I see you're based in Mexico for the New York Times. How did the people in the camp get across the Rio Grande River?
So this is, you know, something that's been building for months and months and months now. And in Mexico, where a lot of the migrants have crossed through, officials say that most of them are not coming directly from Haiti. They're coming from South American countries, Chile and Brazil, Mexican officials say, where they were already settled. And so these migrants have made a really long and often arduous journey, sometimes through this treacherous jungle known as the Darien Gap. And this can be a months-long journey by foot, you know, that is really, really dangerous. And they also have to make it through Mexico, which isn't necessarily a safe country for migrants that are transiting through. So for many people, you saw these numbers starting to rise really in May. And so many of these people have been coming for a long time now, and this is kind of the culmination of that trip.
And Adolfo, you quote one 27-year-old Haitian parent by the name of Lovrens, who has a one-year-old daughter fighting a fever and diarrhea, saying this is worse than being in prison. For the many Americans whose response to this whole story might be, you chose to come here voluntarily and illegally. Do you know what Lovrens was fleeing from Chile, in his case, that they decided was worse than the risks of this crossing?
And they left Haiti because of the extreme poverty and instability. And he went to Chile to try to make a life there. And he thought that that'd be possible. But eventually, he realized he can't legalize his status there. He's not being paid enough to support his family in Chile, let alone the family members back home who depend on him. So he figured the only way to try to support them is to get to the U.S., there is no going back, because they are not going back to anything that will allow them to support themselves.
And so Natalie, Lovren's story from Adolfo's article suggests this different narrative that you alluded to a minute ago than many people here might assume. Especially up north where I am, where people might just see this on TV. We know Haiti just had an earthquake, a hurricane, and violent political turmoil that's ongoing, but it's not so much people coming right from Haiti as people like Lovrens from Adolfo's article who left years ago for South America. Like he writes, Lovrens moved from Haiti to Chile in 2015 and only now came to Texas. So what's that story? What's the larger story here of this kind of three-point migration?
So the big picture here is that Latin America is in crisis, just like much of the world, reeling from a pandemic, a global recession. You know, countries like Brazil and Chile, their economies have been battered by the coronavirus, you know? And, in Chile, you've also seen an increasingly restrictive immigration policy led by President Sebastián Piñera, who tightened border controls, visa rules. So, you know, I was at the border before all of this kind of exploded into the public eye in Matamoros, and where there are tons of Haitians. And a lot of those folks said that their visas had expired and they couldn't renew them, you know, or they had lost their job, just like Adolfo was saying. You have a lot of people who just cannot make ends meet in South America. And so when we think about the migration, flows to the northern border at this point, you got to think not only about the immediate, you know, once-in-a-lifetime moment that Haiti is living right now, where there's the assassination of a president and an earthquake, which is leading people, you know, to leave. But you also have to look more broadly at where Latin America is at this particular moment. Right at our border, you have, you know, a Western Hemisphere that is, a lot of it, in crisis, in economic crisis. And in the case of Chile, where the government has started to, you know, turn to a more restrictive view toward the immigrants inside its border. And so what is building and what could come to the United States are people who are desperate for all sorts of reasons.
Now, listeners, any Haitians or Haitian Americans listening right now, help us report this story, 646-435-7280. Do you have any connections to anyone in Del Rio, Texas, or anyone trying to get there? 646-435-7280. Or maybe you can help describe the conditions that deported Haitians might encounter if they are forced back there, 646-435-7280. Or maybe you can help explain who all these Haitians are who had already migrated to Chile and elsewhere in South America, as Natalie was just describing, and why that was, and why they'd be trying to come here in large numbers all of a sudden now. Maybe tell us a story of someone you know, or maybe you just have a question for our guests. Adolfo Flores, national security and immigration reporter for BuzzFeed News in Del Rio, Texas, and Natalie Kitroeff, who covers Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean for the New York Times. So Adolfo's in Texas, Natalie is in Mexico, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. Adolfo, in the case of Central Americans, many of the undocumented migrants come seeking political asylum from oppression or violence. How many of this group are seeking asylum, and on what grounds?
You know, of all the people I spoke with, the Haitians, none of them have mentioned asylum. They've all really just spoke about the economic conditions back home. But also the violence, you know, the gangs in Haiti have really taken control, and they say it's just very dangerous. But the mention of asylum or any type of of refuge, it hasn't really come up. Much of it has been the need to feed their families.
Natalie, anything to add to that? And I do notice that, and Adolfo, I know, has reported on this, that the Biden administration has chosen to keep in place at least one of Trump's controversial border policies, a pandemic health order called Title 42. So can you talk about the grounds on which these Haitian migrants are seeking admission to the United States?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's important here to remember is something that Adolfo just brought up, which is that Haiti is really in a moment of unprecedented crisis. And it's not just because of these two events. Gang violence has risen and really taken over much of Haiti. And so when the Biden administration began deporting en masse these Haitian migrants, what you saw on the ground in Port-au-Prince, what my colleagues have reported there, is that they're coming back in many cases to a country that, one, they don't know they haven't been in, you know, for years and years and years. They may have a family members. Yes, they were born there, but it's not somewhere where they have deep roots at the moment. And it's a country that is convulsed by the kind of gang violence and political instability, plus a natural disaster that has really, destroyed a lot of infrastructure in the southern peninsula. So you have folks who may not have a home to return to. So while as you said, the Biden administration has kept in place the Title 42 provision that allows them to swiftly deport migrants based on, public health considerations, what's happening here, while the migrants may not be claiming political asylum or refugee status, they're going back to a country that is really not equipped at this particular moment to receive people en masse. And you've seen the Haitian government pretty clearly protest this policy by the Biden administration.
I see that your latest article on this, Natalie, is titled How Hope, Fear, and Misinformation Led Thousands of Haitians to the U.S. Border. What kinds of misinformation?
Well, when you talk to the migrants, that I spoke to that were, in Matamoros, a lot of folks are receiving the same kinds of messages that Central Americans have received since Mr. Biden took office, which is, as the administration moved to dismantle Trump's some of his harsher migration policies, the message was spread both by traffickers, but also by kind of informal networks of migrants and of would-be migrants. And there was this sense also among Haitians that, you know, the contrast alone between Biden and Trump was enough to send this message that, you know, they would be welcomed if they tried to reach the border. And when the Biden administration extended temporary protected status for Haitians, which did not, you know, which only extended protected status for Haitians who were already in the country, there were rumors, there were folks who believed that that was an open door for them. And my colleague, who worked at Port-au-Prince at the time, you know, had saw Haitians kind of coming with their children and bags and believing that they were going to win entry into the country and that they were going to be given humanitarian visas. So there is a lot of misinformation in these networks, and there, you know, is early signals sent by the Biden administration when it went to kind of pursue a more progressive path on migration that were taken by people in the region as, you know, as an invitation in many cases, not in all cases, but it has certainly been pervasive among people that I've.
Adolfo, would someone like the guy Lovrens from your article, who just made the trip from Chile after living there since 2015, be deported back to Chile or to Haiti?
That is a good question, because I'm also asking that same question. My guess is that they would be deported back to Haiti because they don't have legal status in Chile. So I'm not sure that the Chilean government would be able to take them back. That's sort of...
Yeah, that's weird though, right?
Yeah.
Natalie, do you have any information on that? Like, if these people were legal residents of Chile...
But that's what you're seeing. You're seeing the administration is just deporting them to Haiti. So what you're seeing in Haiti right now is that, first of all, they expect thousands to arrive over the coming weeks, the Haitians. And the people that are coming there are people who lived in Central and South America. They're not people who, you know, were just in Haiti. So this is what's happening. And obviously the difficulty there for the Haitian government, which is still kind of trying to establish its political mandate after this assassination and a lot of upheavals that followed, is they have to work to process thousands of people coming in who may not have seen their family members in Haiti for decades. So, it would be difficult for Haiti in any circumstances, for any country in any circumstances, but, you know, this is a moment of acute crisis in the country right now. So what Adolfo is describing, that is the norm. That is what's happening. And it remains to be seen how that plays out on the ground in Haiti.
And for Natalie Kitroeff from the New York Times in Mexico and Adolfo Flores from BuzzFeed News in Del Rio, Texas, 646-435-7280. And Evelyn in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Evelyn, thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning, everyone. The comment that I wanted to make is that if the Biden administration really wants to stop the flow of Haitian migrants to the U.S., then I was born in Haiti, but I came to the U.S. very young. I did two masters here, and I just finished law school last Saturday. So I'm talking from that perspective, somebody mm-hmm. who has a master's in diplomacy and international relations, a master's in business administration, and now a lawyer. So mm-hmm. I'm talking from those perspectives. If the Biden administration really wants to stop the flow of Haitian migrants to the U.S., then they need to help us stop the corruption that's currently going on in Haiti. You have elected officials that come into power. All they want to do is to line up their pockets with funds that are, you know, that should be invested in infrastructure. You know, we need to look at those politicians. How much money do they have invested abroad? If they cannot account for how they receive those funds, freeze those assets, return those money back to Haiti. Let's invest in infrastructure. Let's invest in schools, in hospitals. Then you're going to create jobs. Haitians will want to stay home. Haitians don't want to leave Haiti and go abroad. They're looking for a better life. They're not lazy. They're entrepreneurs. They want to work. But the setting has to be there for them to be able to work. So you have all these politicians with hundreds of millions of dollars. Let us look into those people. The Biden administration can start there. You have the UN in Haiti. What is the UN doing? The Haiti has crumbled. It fell apart under the UN's watch. Things got worse. Now Haiti has been ruled by bandits. And you have a UN, group in Haiti, so-called. You know, I don't know what kind of work they're doing. Let's look at the big picture. Not just Haitians fleeing poverty, Haitians. No, look at the big picture. What is the Biden administration doing now to help stop corruption so the money can stay in Haiti, so it can be invested, create jobs? And what is the UN really doing? You have gangsters running Haiti. People can get to work. They can get to school. So what's their role? Let's look at the bigger picture before we can talk about migrants fleeing, you know, for a better life, trying to make a better life for their family.
I hear you.
I'll take any questions that you have. I did immigration law. I booked that class, so you can ask me any question you want.
Congratulations on your new brand new law degree, first of all. And let me ask you this question, Evelyn. That would be, what role do you want for the international community? I get calls sometimes from Haitian Americans who say, hands off Haiti. The UN has come in and messed things up in the way you were just describing. The U.S. has come in repeatedly and messed things up. So is it better for the international community to withdraw from Haiti, or do you want them in a certain respect to play corruption cop in a more aggressive way? And what would that look like?
Thank you for that question. That is such a great question. Thank you for caring enough to want to ask that question. Haitians want accountability for the money from Petrocaribe that, you know, Venezuela had given Haiti a ton of help. Politicians here in the U.S., and they know who they are. I'm not going to call them out. Politicians here in the U.S., politicians there in Haiti squandered that money. Why not start with an investigation there? Find out what happened to the billions of dollars that Haiti were supposed to have in its coffers to help with the development of Haiti. Venezuela gave Haiti a huge amount of help. Let's start finding out what the funds are, where people have stolen money from Haiti. Help us bring that money back. That's the role the international community can play, because we can do it. We don't have the assets to go after these people. Help Haiti find every single dollar that have been squandered from the coffers of Haiti. We can start there. And as far as the UN, they're a lost cause. I don't know what they're doing in Haiti. They need to get out of Haiti if they're not helping Haitians, because you have bandits, kidnappers running rampant, kidnapping women and children, sexually exploiting women, you know, and young boys too. What is the UN doing? Tell me, what role are they playing? I would really love to ask them that question face to face. I am someone, you know, who's been trying to help Haiti any way I can. I am powerless to do the things that I want to do. That's why I went to law school, to help immigrants, not just Haitians, people mm-hmm. at the borders mm-hmm. whose kids were being ripped apart from their arms. That's why I went to school, to advocate for people. So when I get a chance, I want to face the folks at the UN face to face and ask them, have you been helping Haiti, or have you been hindering in the process? That's my question to them.
Evelyn, thank you so much for your call, and please do call us again. Well, Natalie Kitroff from the New York Times, a very confident Evelyn calling in with her thoughts and offering herself up as if a guest to take follow-up questions, which she just did from me. For you, who covers the Caribbean and Central America and Mexico on a regular basis, I'm curious what you were thinking as you listened to Evelyn's call and her bigger picture about corruption in the international community.
I mean, I think Evelyn basically beautifully summarized the view of many, many Haitians, which is frustration and anger. You know, when you see Haitians streaming across the border to the United States, many who Haitian Americans and also Haitians in Haiti say, you know, what are the U.S. policies that have helped lead to this situation, and the international community as well. And I, you know, the most recent iteration of this, I mean, the United States has a long history of failed international policy in Haiti. I don't think anybody, even within the U.S. government, would argue with that. But most recently, the president who was assassinated, Jovenel Moïse, you know, in the months, years before he was assassinated, he was steadily tightening his grip on power. Gang violence was getting out of control. And successive administrations, the Trump administration and then the Biden administration, both supported either tacitly or overtly his administration. And at the time, Haiti was convulsed in protests, and protesters could not believe that the United States would not come out against this guy. Now, for the United States, the question was, okay, what is the best way to maintain stability? And what the U.S. saw, both administrations, was that the best way was to support this president and to keep him in power. He had been elected, you know, let him stay in power. But the reality on the ground is that conditions were deteriorating. And this is just most recent, as I said, in a long line of, you know, movements by the United States and the rest of the international community to support leaders who do not have the confidence and the trust of both patients, and who most patients believe are exactly what Evelyn described, people who are not representing them and not representing their interests. And that situation in which people don't believe.
And Natalie's line is breaking up a little bit. Adolfo Flores from BuzzFeed, let me turn back to you and ask back to the situation on the ground. The Wall Street Journal article today says, thanks to an influx of Border Patrol agents working with Texas law enforcement, U.S. authorities have about half the bridge, that's the Del Rio to Mexico bridge, where so many of these Haitian migrants have congregated under the bridge. They have about half the bridge under control. What does under control mean from their vantage point?
I don't know. Because when I was there, I was there Saturday and Sunday, the only U.S. authorities in the camp were, I counted about seven, maybe five Border Patrol agents on horses. Other than that, there is no one else. There was no one else going into the camp. And the National Guard and DPS, they were on the outskirts of the camp, keeping everyone inside because they weren't letting them leave into Mexico.
What's the role of the agents on horseback in this scene? This is the clip that a lot of our listeners probably saw on TV yesterday. Some of those agents on horseback seeming to physically use the horses, rearing up a little bit and everything, or walking into the crowd to try to push people back. And were they really using whips to physically push Haitians back behind some kind of line? It appeared like that on first blush on these videos. The Biden administration said no, that was just the flicking of the reins of the horses. What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, I didn't see it, but I spoke to some photographers who were on the Mexican banks who saw this, and they said that the whip was only used on the horse to sort of control the horse. And I did ask them, well, you know, did the Border Patrol agent maybe crack the whip in the air, sort of scare, the men trying to get in to the camp? And they said no, you know, but they did say that the yelling and the things that he said, and I don't know what they are, were out of line. They said that definitely was out of line. But there's still a lot of questions, like what was the point of doing that? What were they going to do? We put them on the horse? I'm curious to see how the investigation that the U.S. government is undertaking turns out.
Yeah. And the town of Del Rio is said to have a usual population of less than 40,000 residents. So 15,000-ish migrants suddenly arriving is obviously a lot. Texas Governor Greg Abbott asked for federal help, saying the numbers are overwhelming local law enforcement and health services. Have you reported on this aspect at all? Can you describe the effect on the people of Del Rio in general and the law enforcement and health needs of the migrants in particular from town services?
Yeah, so that was in Del Rio. You don't actually really see the impact of the people being held under the bridge because they're not being released into the community. There was it's very low numbers. I saw maybe Saturday or Sunday, 7 Cubans were released to a local community center. But there is more of a police and military presence near the site. But it's in terms of the community itself, you're not really seeing that. But on the Mexican side, you do like the downtown area of Ciudad Acuña, which is a site across from Del Rio. You do see Haitians going to the store to buy food, you get money out of, that's being wired to them. And it's kind of an interesting scene when you drive through the downtown area of this of Ciudad Acuña in Mexico. But it's now you don't see that as much because people are not allowed to leave, though they still are able to through the river. It's just a little more dangerous now. But
go ahead, finish your thought. Go ahead.
But in terms of the county, like the city, like health services, they are being used to an extent. I don't know how often. I spoke to a father yesterday whose 12-year-old daughter collapsed on Sunday from dehydration. So he took her to Border Patrol, and they took him and her to the local county hospital of Valverde. And the doctors diagnosed her, with dehydration. And they told the dad, just give her more water. And, he sort of questioned, well, I would love to give her more water, but we don't have enough. Mm-hmm. Like, I give her my water. Like, I can't do the thing that you're asking me to do to keep my daughter from fainting.
And there, unfortunately, on that horror story, we leave it with BuzzFeed News national security and immigration reporter Adolfo Flores, whose latest article is called Thousands of Haitians Lack Food, Water, and Medicine at Bleak U.S.-Mexico Border Camp, and Natalie Kitroev, who covers Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean for The New York Times. Natalie and Adolfo, thank you very much for explaining this story as much as you did.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thanks, Brian.